Hey everyone, today's guest is John O'Callaghan, lead vocalist, guitarist, and pianist for the Tempe, Arizona rock band, The Maine. John and I take a deep dive into their fan favorite, Black Butterflies and Deja Vu, from their 2017 album, Lovely Little Lonely. John spoke about how it was during the writing for this album that he began to really work on the quality of his demo recordings, trying to bring forth a more full vision of what he was hearing in his head, rather than a simple voice recording on his phone, as he had done previously. We talked about how locale can shape an album sound, and how much John loved recording this record out in California. John spoke about their working relationship with producer Colby Wedgeworth, and how he was an integral part to the final product that the song became. And John lets us all in on a little something that not even his bandmates know, that the inspiration for Black Butterflies and Deja Vu actually came while he was channeling his inner Grateful Dead. So grab your peace pipe, crack a beverage, and let's get into this thing.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
It's supposed to be 96 today. And I think the first 100 degrees comes on Thursday. So,
but as anybody that's ever been to Arizona knows from the locals, it's a dry heat. So it's just fine. You know, it's not till you get it to 115, you got to start worrying, right?
What's so funny is I've been doing like a little radio show kind of thing on Spotify. And I literally was recording my 15th episode right before I started talking to you today. And I was saying that, like, I don't know how many times I have said it's a dry heat or heard it's a dry heat from other people. It's like, and now at 32 years old, I'm like, it's just like so ingrained, so indoctrinated into what I'm saying from being from Arizona that it's like, this is, it's just like for so long, it was like, you know, I was like, yes, it's a dry heat. It's a dry heat. I hate humidity. It's a dry heat. And now I'm like, I love dry heat. This is perfect. I love being here. I'm old now. It's awesome for the bones.
I, of course, have quite the contrast being the band being from Gainesville, Florida, and me living in Florida most of my life. The humidity down there, you can cut it with a knife, so it's ridiculous. So
for sure.
It's definitely a trade-off. But, you know, you guys started in 2007 as a band, and I first remember hearing you, or maybe you didn't start in 2007. I think your first record came out then, but I first heard of you when we did the Warped Tour together in 2009. And I remember kind of, and it wasn't a chuckle at your expense or making fun of you, but I remember seeing you guys walk by and you had these red outfits on and you were just, I don't know if you remember those or
yeah,
not.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You were all matching. And I remember looking out, I think I was on the bus the first time I saw it. I said, God, because at that point I was older than you are now. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I could not fit my fat ass into that outfit and look good. And these guys are actually pulling it off. There was a little bit of jealousy there. I'm not going to lie. But no, you guys had it going on, man. And, you know, what a career that you've built. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, and that setting is such a trip, you know, especially being, well, 2008 was our first time, but we only did 10 days. And I mean, we've done now the Warped Tour, I think, 5 times.
Yeah.
And just that setting where it's like, you can still be a really, you know, we were a very small band and modest, humble beginnings. And being able to see all these other bands, you know, I think we did it in 2008 in a van for those 10 days. We didn't sleep at all.
Brutal.
You know, tons of driving and whatnot. But to see that, you know, to see that there's other bands like your band in these big buses, and it was like, that's what you can work towards. And you can also be very cool to other bands, and you don't have to be dicks, and you can share the stage. And it's all sort of this, I don't know, it was like that first moment of like camaraderie, like that moment where you're like, yes, we are all doing the same thing, and yes, we were all kind of working towards the same goals. So I don't know, it was a really influential time. Yeah, just a really special time, and it's a trip to think of, you know, 15 years later, 14 years later. It's wild.
No, it really is. You know, and when we were that band, that young band, that would have been back in the 90s, our first couple of Warped Tours, it was just all the kids that were out there. I mean, we were playing to everybody. 90% of the audience knew who we were. By the time you guys got on the tour, you were experiencing that, and you were benefiting from that. We were the veterans out there, but we kept doing the tour because we kept getting new pockets of fans every time we did it.
Sure.
We kind of had to. It was like the perfect storm. And we definitely, not in a bad way, not like it was like, oh God, we don't want to do the tour. We kept doing the tour. We played the last show in Atlantic City in 2019, you know? So we kept doing it though, because like I said, we kept getting these pockets of fans. And I've never, ever felt a traveling tour quite like the Warped Tour in terms of camaraderie. It's
yeah.
just what a beautiful thing that Kevin put together. I can't say enough about it.
It really was. Yeah, it really was. It's definitely, I don't know, in the land of sentimentality now, where you're like, we missed a year of our lives in 2020. It's like that kind of stuff really stands out when you're like, oh man, that was such a blast and such a time to, like, I don't know, rally together and just work towards having a good day.
Right.
You know?
Well, as I researched you guys a little further, I noticed some similarities between our bands. We both worked with producer Howard Benson at some point.
Oh, nice.
Howard did a couple of our records. And I also noticed, I don't know how you put this together, but you did a couple records later with another guy named Benson. So I don't know if any band that's ever had two producers with the same last name that are different guys, but I thought that was pretty cool. But the reason I wanted to bring up a producer thing, and we're going to get into this later when we start breaking down the song, was Colby Wedgeworth, whom you've worked with a number of times now, and I love his production. It's just rich and full, and like I said, we'll get into that in a moment, but I thought that was cool that you guys had worked with Howard. I actually had Howard on the show as one of my first episodes.
So. Oh, no way. Yeah, I haven't talked to Howard in so long, probably since we did the record. That's crazy.
Yeah, so we have a good rapport with him. Black Butterflies and Deja Vu was released on March 2nd, 2017 to streaming. The record Lovely Little Lonely was released about a month later on April 7th, 2017. The previous album was American Candy, which was about exactly 2 years prior, released on March 31st of 2015. Between the American Candy record and Lovely Little Lonely, where were you in writing Black Butterflies and Deja Vu? Where did that come in?
I remember American Candy. I think we did did the Warped Tour that year, and that was like us coming back, and we would have been wearing blue at that time, not the red. So we were switching up the color palette. But the record prior to American Candy, which was a record called Forever Halloween, we did that with the other Benson, the Brendan Benson, out in Tennessee, and the response that we got from Forever Halloween, not as well received as some of our other records. And I remember getting a lot of questions from fans after shows, because we tend to stick around after the shows and talk to everybody. And we've made that very much a staple in our band's existence. But a lot of people were asking me, like, are you okay? Because I felt like there were a lot of dark undertones to Forever Halloween. And I think I was okay at the time. I was dealing with just my own personal stuff, but I felt like the way that the record aesthetically felt, the way that the songs were recorded on Forever Halloween, probably lent themselves to more of the brooding kind of darker themes that our band has kind of toyed around with. And so basically, this is the long way of saying Forever Halloween set up American Candy, because I wanted to dive more into the pop sensibility of the main and the poppier side of what I enjoy about songwriting. And Colby ended up kind of, we had experienced working with Colby on Pioneer, which was before Forever Halloween. We sort of went off a different route, and Colby kind of kept doing his thing. And we got him on board for American Candy. And after writing American Candy, we toured on it. And I think the cycle for our band was always about 2 years, like you said. It was always, you know, you put out a record, you tour for about 2 years. And then in the in-between, you write for the next record, and then you kind of restart the cycle. So I would have been writing for Lovely Little Lonely towards the end of that 2 year period. So from 2015 to 2017, it would have been towards the back half of that.
I know you play guitar and piano. Do you typically compose on one or the other, or just depends? And what did you compose this song on?
Well, really, it depends on what phase of my life I was in and what instruments I had available. So for American Candy, I would have been doing a lot of just voice memo guitar stuff. And then for Lovely Little Lonely, I started to really dive more into trying to make more polished demos. So I was in Pro Tools and started, you know, really kind of building tracks as opposed to just having these caveman style voice memos and just like hums and grunts and, you know, guitar string sounds and stuff. So this would have been like the sort of the phase of really diving into more of the production on my own and diving into to recording on my own.
And how close was the final product in terms of arrangement, lyrics, to that initial demo that you did? Did you spend a lot of time on the demo, or was the demo just kind of kicked out and it was what it was and became what it is?
Well, so the demo itself, actually, we would have kept it up in the demo version. So the chorus ended up being that Fallout kind of A-B style. So I remember being in Heber, Arizona, which is up north, in our guitar player Jared's parents' cabin. And we kind of hunkered down and did a lot of the pre-production for Lovely Little Lonely there. And Colby went with us. And we basically brought all these demos, and Black Butterflies is one of those. And we just said, hey, like, what do you think? You know, and we trusted him to a very, very deep extent. The relationship was just so just harmonious in that it was just like a good... It was like a sixth member. It was like having another person in the band. And so Black Butterflies, he took it to that fall, you know, that anti-chorus place, which was, I think, really new territory for us. He really wanted to drive home the idea of this up-tempo, upbeat, and then really, what are you going to say? You know, here's the moment where everybody needs to be listening. And that was... I remember being in the room and hearing kind of the piano come to life, and we're kind of just back and forth, you know, trading off harmony ideas and melody ideas. And yeah, it was just a really special time.
It's so funny. I love when artists are open to talking about and giving accolades to the producer, because I can't stress enough, you know, no disrespect to you guys, if you would have went on your own, maybe cut demos, you know, that chorus might have just been, you know, a 4-4 drum beat.
Absolutely.
You had to have the producer have this vision of, I really want the listener to hear what you're saying lyrically here. I want it to hit them. You know, the producer coming in with that idea of it can be this, and you going, wow, you know, I've actually felt the light bulb going off in my head of, wow, I never would have thought that.
Absolutely.
And if you can open your mind and your heart to that, you can really, really advance your songwriting. I want to touch real quick, and then we're going to jump into the song. The album is recorded at the Brooklyn Patch, which was a house with a built-in studio specifically for bands to record and write. And then later you guys rented, I guess, an Airbnb in Gualala, California, and transformed it into a recording space in the mountains overlooking the ocean. And how do you feel? Did you feel that that influenced the recording at all?
Absolutely. I think we tapped into something on our own, just realizing that, you know, especially nowadays when sort of you can travel with your recording setup, you can really create a recording studio anywhere that people will allow it. And on American Candy, Colby was into the idea of traveling to Joshua Tree, and we did the same thing. We rented a house and talked to the owner and said, hey, we're a rock band, but like we're an older rock band. We're not as crazy. Like, we'll drink, but we won't be loud. Like, so
we're not going to trash your house.
Yeah. There were caveats, but it was, the same kind of deal. We ended up, we wrote the song in New York at the Brooklyn Patch House, which was just a crazy brownstone, like four stories. We should not have been allowed in that place. They let us record there. We wrote the song and then brought it to Heber, broke it down with Colby. And then, like you said, we went to Gualala, California, which I had never heard of in my entire life. I don't even know if I could find it on a map, but
I've never heard of it till I saw it.
Yeah, it was an incredible, incredible house overlooking the ocean. And it really did. I do believe that it added, we ended up getting weird and got stoned and recorded some ocean noise over the, we like rappelled down a mic and we ended up using it on the record. So it's like
a band, you know, a band getting stoned and weird. Come on.
Yeah.
No.
Right. I know. But again, to give props to Colby, he is still very much down for the experimentation and he's down to entertain us. You know, he's down to let us get a little bit wild and a little weird. So
I wanted to mention that because I can feel, I don't know, I guess the word is exuberance in the recording. It just sounds not happy in a cheesy way. It just sounds upbeat. And I can also hear, because I noticed that Colby is based in Nashville. He's done albums for the Newsboys, Jordan Feliz, Hawk Nelson, some Christian artists and bands. But I can kind of hear not a country tinge, but I can hear that pop Nashville kind of country. I don't want to say country sound because your song doesn't sound country, but I can hear that coming through. And I brought this up about where you guys recorded because I've never talked about it on the show, but you know, my band, you know, Les and Jake's done a couple records. We did one in Malibu. And when I listen to that record, I can just hear, I can feel it. I can feel the California beach vibes. And we made another record called GNVFLA in Chicago in 2008. And it was in the middle of this dark winter. And damn if that record's not dark. I can just feel it, you know? So the other thing I haven't brought up on the show and we'll get into the song. I've never specifically went and asked somebody after almost 50 episodes now or over 50 episodes, what does Black Butterflies and Deja Vu mean?
Like the summary of the feeling I get, or what does it mean conceptually?
Just,
like what?
Just the title. We're going to get into what the song means and the lyrics, but just that, it's a different title. It's strange.
Yeah. The title itself came from a fit of deja vu while seeing a black butterfly. I kid you not. I know it sounds really lame.
That's
but
awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was in Gualala as I was writing the lyrics for the song and attempting to, I was sitting on at a little coffee table out on overlooking the beach outside with my coffee. And yeah, that kind of just came. Like, I don't know. It was one of those, like, I'm not trying. It was like, I'm trying to write a song, but I have no idea what the song's about. And it was like, again, kind of with the idea of where you record, you just kind of let it all be a part of it. And that kind of crept through.
I like that it's literal because sometimes as artists, we like to get artsy fartsy and it's like, oh, black butterflies and deja vu. It came to me in a dream, but I like how this was, it just was what it was. That's great. The song is 3 minutes and 23 seconds, kind of right there in the pop length wheelhouse. There's like a keyboard quick, like 1 second sound and then the snare hit and the band's in. It's a 12 second intro before the vocal start. It's just this dancey rhythm with a really cool, like haunting arpeggiated guitar part that's panned off to the right speaker. And I love that guitar part. I love the tonality to it. Before the first lyric starts, there's a pre-delay on the word what that gradually comes up in the mix till the vocals start. Just cool. Like, is that something that was done in the studio or something was done in the mix? And did Colby mix the record too?
He did. Yeah.
He did. Okay.
Yeah. So all like the delay throws and stuff that I think that's a testament to where our relationship was as singer and producer too, is just, I would be able to relay like, you know, ideas and, you know, hey, I'm hearing a whoa, 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 and he'll be able to bring it to life pretty quickly. So it was a post production kind of move. So
okay, so probably it a mixing or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it was a mix thing.
I love that. It's a great way to kick off the verse. And like I said, 12 second intro, it just hits you, and then you're in. And the lyric is, "What would you say if you could say everything you needed to the one you needed to?" And initially, when I listened to this track, John, I thought that the verse kept going, but I think that's really all the verse. The next part's your pre-chorus. Is that what you would agree?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read it all as one because it's one idea here. What would you say if you could say everything you needed to the one you needed to, and now we're in the pre-chorus. You flash like a setting sun. You come around, I come undone. Can't find the sound under my tongue when I look at you. The whole thing is harmonized till that very last line, when I look at you, and then you say, well. And it adds this personal touch. I've talked about that before on the show where everything else is harmonized, it's the band, but that line, it's like, when I look at you, it's just you saying that. Again, from the original demo, do you recall, was there harmonies there in your head, or was that again something you crafted in the studio?
Yeah, I think the harmony aspect. So one thing that I'm always really, I guess, self-conscious about is the idea of my range and where I can actually sing live. And it's always been a huge thing with me. And on our record Pioneer, the first record that we did with Colby, I remember like a trick of compensating was always, if we can create the harmony, treat the harmony, the high harmony as sort of a lead, but also creep in your melody that you can actually sing and yep. You'll be comfortable singing live. And I always, it happened in one of our songs called Misery. And from that moment on, I was like, I was comfortable with doing, you know, exploiting my voice in the studio, hitting the notes that I can hit, but maybe only occasionally. And then live, I either, you know, I'll take it down and sing that lower, you know, vocal line and let Ken, our guitar player, sing the high harmony and make him do all the grunt work.
Hey, man, musician to musician, thanks for giving a damn. A lot of guys don't think about this stuff, and ladies, where they'll sing out of their register and you go see them live and you're like, okay, this isn't cutting it. So
yeah,
it's cool that you're cognizant of that. I'm definitely think of that when I write songs and keys, like, am I going to be able to pull this off live? We're a live band. You guys are a live band.
Absolutely. So anyways, I would say that all of the demos for Lovely Little Lonely specifically had that in mind. You know, I was doing these high melody lines and treating them as harmonies, but also in the mix, we were treating them like they could be the lead. So Colby and I kind of worked that out.
Something else really interesting, you know, the first lyric here, what would you say if you could say, is you singing like in the mix, it's the lead vocal, but the next two lines are almost like a backing vocal. The treatment on the vocal changes, like the delay or whatever's on it, the everything you needed to the one you needed to. It's almost a different production value there. What would you say if you could say? That's something done in mixing, or was that something you guys thought? Because it's very interesting that you only get one line as a lead vocal and then it kind of drops to something different, but that's the only time it happens in the verse. It's cool.
Yeah, it felt like, and I think we did it quite a few times on this record, but it felt like sort of responses. So it was like the call and response aspect of songs that we really dug and dig, and treating it more like there were multiple people singing when it really is just me.
I stopped short of calling it a call and response. So I initially wrote that in my notes, but it's not. It feels almost like it, but it's different. I've never really heard a song that does what it does there. It's very unique. That's an interesting part.
Right on. Well, I guess that was where our headspace was the call and response, but making it more so like, here's some backup singers, that kind of vibe.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, I read all the lyrics there through the pre-chorus a moment ago. Can you set up this first verse and pre-chorus of what you're saying there lyrically? What the inspiration is there?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't even think my band knows this, and I was thinking about it, and the big thing is, from my perspective, and why I love music is that why I love listening to music and digesting music the way I do is the ability, my ability, and the ability of being able to attach your own meanings to songs, right? And so I've always been reluctant to like tell too and divulge too much of what our songs mean, because I'm afraid that it's going to ruin it for people. But after listening to episodes of your podcast, I'm like, well, that's kind of what makes this really special. And like, these songs are different from your other songs. You know what I mean? Like there's a significance to it. So my band will be finding this out, but the whole song was based around a psychedelic trip that I took. And I wanted to disguise the trip because I wanted to tell people about the trip, but I didn't want to be blatant. I didn't want to say like, hey, I took some acid and here's a song I wrote about it, you know? And basically what I wanted to do was disguise the idea of this trip in the form of a love song. And really who I'm talking to in this love song is me describing falling in love with the world. And that was the importance of the black butterfly. And when I saw this black butterfly, it reminded me of, and we're going to get really heady here, and it's going to sound like stoner mumbo jumbo, but I was laying in the backyard and I was by the pool.
You and were on acid, was, John.
Yeah. While I was,
it's going to be heady.
Yeah. While I was on acid, I felt a bird fly, and it was probably in reality 50 feet or so above me, but it felt like the bird was right above me, and I could feel the wind and I could feel everything. And it was like such a moment of enlightenment, and such for whatever reason that triggered the idea that everything's going to be okay. It was like this very warm feeling of like, I've been so caught up in work. I've been so caught up in being connected to people online. And, you know, because our band was based on MySpace, that's where we started. So we essentially grew up on the internet, and I felt such a connectivity back to the world and back to the visceral part of being on the ground and being outside. So anyways, the black butterfly reminded me of that. And while I was writing the lyrics, it sort of sparked that whole memory of this trip. And what would you say, that whole line was something I had written down while I was experiencing this trip. And it was like, what would you tell yourself if you could tell yourself everything you needed to remember, you know, and everything that you're feeling right now, what would you say? And
well, the lyric makes a little more sense now. I can't find the sound under my tongue, which for those who have ever partook past tense in LSD, knows that you put the little tab under your tongue to let it absorb into your body. So this is a first, John. This is a first. And that's a really cool story that you were tapping into your inner Grateful Dead there. I love it. I had no idea this is the shift that this was going to take. I love that you wrote this song on acid. This is amazing. At 35 seconds, which is quick, and man, you're in the chorus now. And as we talked about at the top, it drops out.
Lose my voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise, so I'm trying to tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words.
The whole band. It gets really personal here. 35 seconds we're in. The band drops out to just keys, a synthesizer. There's an arpeggiated like guitar picking part that's panned over to the left, and it's just vocals. And there's this cool swirling synth panning from the right to left speakers. This is kind of going around that just kind of gives this atmospheric, I don't know, maybe feeling that you're on acid maybe, but I'm going to read the lyrics here. I lose my voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise though I'm trying to. Tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words. Just another lovesick afternoon. Black butterflies and deja vu. Hoping for the right words. Waiting for the right words. And at the very end, you get this spirited, yeah. that go before it gets into the reintro. On the line halfway through the chorus, "Just Another Lovesick Afternoon," a hi-hat comes in there with bass notes.
Just another lovesick afternoon, black butterflies and deja vu, hoping for the right words, waiting for the right words.
It's either on keys or actual bass. I couldn't really tell. It just kind of adds another layer there. But really interesting how this drops out. But it really gives you that emotion that I think that you guys and Colby were going for. So set up these lyrics, please.
I guess even more so than the lyrics, I remember the actual moment where Colby said, "What if we try the piano?" And that was like the holy crap moment while we were doing the pre-production bit. And I forget what and this is going to lean into the pop side of things, but I forget what Justin Bieber record was out at the time, but there was a song that he had referenced that was, again, that speaks to the idea of the relationship between producer and artist, and that this was a song I was completely unfamiliar with, and he brought it into our world and you know, said, "What if we try something like this?" And that clicked and set up the whole part. So again, kudos to Colby and his kind of pushing us into that realm.
Yeah, something that, like you said, that you wouldn't have thought of. That's why a producer, you know, can be genius in those situations. They really
absolutely
can.
Absolutely. Lyrics themselves just came from again, the idea of being overwhelmed by the beauty that I was experiencing, the beauty and the love, the warm feelings that I was feeling, and the I don't know, the gratitude. And, you know, I don't want it to sound like it was such a religious experience. It was such a spiritual experience. And it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't abusing the idea of this trip. I was leaning into the idea of how beautiful the world was and how it didn't matter what I was wanting to say, or it didn't matter what I said at all, because I felt everything.
It's almost like a love, not to interrupt you, it's almost like a love song to yourself, you know.
Absolutely.
I thought this was a love song. I figured boy meets girl, or, you know, it's a traditional, just you know, taking it verbatim. But that's really interesting how you felt this oneness with the earth, I guess, with
yourself. And again, I think that's what I was trying to do, was to sort of disguise that idea, because now I hadn't met my wife until that April 7th, when the record dropped. Love of the Lonely is when I met her. And, you know, I had never really been in love before. So all I had really known was the version of love that I saw through, you know, through my friend's eyes or my parents' eyes, or I had never experienced it for myself. But now, as I look back and even listening to this song, because I listened to it for the first time in a long time before the podcast, because I was like, what the hell? I don't even know what I'm going to say. And, but now
people don't understand. I always talk about it. People don't understand. Like, we as artists don't sit around and listen to our own stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not driving down the road. I'm not driving down the road listening to myself sing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But thinking about it now in the context of the love that I have for my wife and the life that we've built together, it certainly applies. You know, it applied to myself at that moment in 2016, 17, and now it applies, but just in a different way. And it's a pretty special feeling to know that exists now in my world, and it exists in a different way.
That's very cool. As I said before, it has that spirited yeah, and then we're into the re-intro, 12 seconds, same as the top. And now we're into verse 2 and pre-chorus 2. I'm going to read it all as once here. The first 3 lines are the verse. The last 4 lines are the pre-chorus. The echo vocal comes back here, but I can't tell what you're saying here. It's not the first word, just. What are you saying that builds up there? I listened in headphones.
Actually, it is. I think the way that the delay kind of cut off the T, it mumbles the whole word, which was interesting that you say that, because we had just played it live, and Ken, our guitar player, ends up doing that live now. And somebody commented on it. It was like, that's the first time I ever noticed that he's saying just. So
you can, it's very apparent. It's what at the start of the song, but when it comes in there, and I just thought it was cool. I'm like, you know what? I think he's saying a nonsense word. I don't think he's saying anything there, but you are saying. And we've been fooled on this show before with stuff. It happened in a Sum 41 episode where a lyric was, you know, some people hear it this way and hear it the other way. And a lot of times it's the delay or the pre-delay that you have on a vocal. It will really mess with what you're hearing with the syllables. It's very interesting. So we get into verse number 2.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna read the lyrics now. Just yesterday, north of LA, I couldn't help but think of you. Every time I think of you. You crash like a rolling wave. You come around, I lose my brain. And then the back half of the pre-chorus here is the same lyrics as the first time. Can't find the sound under my tongue. Everything up to that point, verse and pre-chorus, has harmonies on it, vocal harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last line again is naked. It's just you when I look at you. Well, and now you're into the second chorus. So set up those lyrics if you can. And I'm kind of understanding that I'm assuming Gulala is north of LA.
Yeah. So it was inspired, like you're saying, on the drive out. And I think up to that point, I don't think I had ever taken the PCH. Like, so I don't think I've ever taken the one all the way up like that. And
it's a crazy drive.
It's an incredibly beautiful drive, like unparalleled
awesome.
Beauty. And that was what we were kind of experiencing and seeing for the first time. You know, we took the van and trailer because we had all our gear and stuff in the back and we're going up. And it was, again, kind of one of those, again, with the idea of deja vu, of like those feelings kind of coming back and kind of feel those exact same things as you're seeing, kind of really taking notice and really taking notice of the beauty in the world and seeing things with kind of those new eyes, you know. And again, with the parallel to being in love, you know, it's like seeing someone again for the first time, you know. Like there will always be that first moment that you saw them, but that feeling can be obtained again, and it can happen. And it's like hearing a song that creates that nostalgia. It's like, oh my God, that kind of takes me right back. And I guess that was what I was saying in this second verse was, you know, I've driven past and through LA, I don't know, hundreds of times. And this one just kind of stuck out.
Yeah. You saw a different beauty all of a sudden, which is crazy. I think we can all relate to that in some semblance where all of a sudden, how many times have I been down this road or this area, but I saw something new for the first time. It's really
neat. Absolutely.
Also on the second and third line of the verse, I couldn't help but think of you every time I think of you. It's again, what you're referring to as the call and response. It happens again there in that second verse, which is cool. After the line where you're alone, when I look at you, well, it drops back down again. This time for chorus two, that hi-hat is right off the top. It's in there throughout the whole chorus, as well as the bass notes are at the top here throughout, which is great.
I lose my voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise, so I'm trying to tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words. Just another lovesick afternoon.
Again, the lyrics here, I'm going to read them one more time. It's the same as the first chorus. I lose my voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise, though I'm trying to. Tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words. Just another lovesick afternoon. Black butterflies and deja vu. Hoping for the right words. Waiting for the right words. And on the third line, tell you all the right words. On words. Right then. It's an interesting placement on why it would come in here on the third line. And it's awesome. There's a delayed, I don't even know what you would call this, John. It's like a metal. It's like if you were to hit, take a stick and hit like a metal highway drum or something. It's like this
metal drum
that comes in there.
So I'm trying to tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words.
It's really cool. Why there? Was that something Colby thought of or?
We felt like, I remember feeling like, which was why we started the second chorus off with the hi-hats and the sub bass.
Yeah.
We felt like there needed to be new elements every time, because I think just copy and pasting the same instrumental would just not be as exciting. because of the anti-chorus, because of the lack of instrumentation around there, we felt like there needed to be something that catches your ear every time through.
You know why it's great though? Is because I had to rewind it like 5 times. I'm like, why is this chorus different? It doesn't really, like, all of a sudden there's huge vocals and big guitars.
Sure.
No, it retains the same feeling as the first chorus, but those subtle differences, like that drum, the hi-hat off the top, the sub bass notes off the top. It's just, it's really, really, really great production.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And that sound that comes in, that sort of that stomp-esque kind of sound, it actually is a recurring sound in the record Lovely Little Lonely. So it's a loop that we created that ends up coming back in multiple songs.
Okay.
And I don't recall exactly how we created it, but I remember once we got enough of that dirt on it and created sort of that really, I don't know, that unique kind of snare sound, I knew that it felt sort of dark. It felt like the rest of the record. So it definitely comes back in multiple songs.
That's awesome. Well, we get into the, what I'm calling now, it's not quite the bridge, it's like a post chorus. And after you say Waiting for the Right Words, the band breaks back in, but it's like this backbeat, breakbeat, drum pattern that happens. There's like a really fast hi-hat shuffle, and there's like these shakers that are panned to the right. Just the whole feel changes here. And then you're saying, "And you,"
yeah,
this vocal. And that goes underneath that vocal throughout the whole bridge. When the lyrics start, there's a clean guitar hook that's mimicking the melody here too, which is really killer. It's not exact with it. It's almost like a fraction or two of a second off. Really, really neat placement with that. And that clean guitar is ghosting, you know, following the melody throughout. I'm going to read the lyrics here. "I've been searching for the right words, right words. But I can't even find an echo. Don't you let go. There are only 26 letters I can use just to tell you I won't let go. Don't you let go." There's harmonies throughout the whole bridge except on those last two lines. They're naked. "I won't let go. Don't you let go." Again, giving it that personal feeling. I love the layers here. I love the "and you" that's present underneath this whole part. It's a great departure, but it works perfectly.
I've been searching for the right words, but I can't even find it. And let go, don't you let go. There are only 26 letters I can use just to tell you I won't let go, don't you let go. I lose my voice when I look.
Yeah, thank you. And to be honest, the "and you" was sort of a, like you said before, like a throwaway kind of two word thing. It didn't really make sense in the concept of the song, but it just sounded good. And it wasn't they weren't words until that moment in the studio. So they were just a falsetto kind of doo doo, whatever it is. And and Colby was like, "Well, you kind of have to say something there." I was like, "And you?" He's like, "Yeah, perfect."
It's great. And it's from this moment that the song really elevates. It's from that bridge part where you're now introducing all this other stuff. And at the very end, you know, "Don't you let go," then bang, you're in the last double chorus, which is really powerful because now the whole band's in. It's not broken down. It's sung up an octave. There's harmonies on it. It's just like the lights really come on here. I wrote "powerful" in my notes.
My voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise, so I'm trying to tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words.
There's off placed backing vocals here and there throughout the whole thing. These call and responses that are happening in and out, and they don't really follow a rhyme or reason. I didn't like put them exact in my notes because I wrote here tons of vocal layering at the end would get confusing to try to completely analyze it for the listener because it's kind of all over the place, you know.
And
not in a bad way. It's just there's so much going on, and I'm gonna attribute that probably to Colby. Yes.
Yeah, this was so our brains were thinking of this song as A, B, A, B. And then this whole section that you just explained was in our heads. That was like, well, now it's going to sound like a pregnancy, but it was a C-section. So that was that was like our outro kind of. And we didn't really think of it in terms of like, here, we're going to revisit the chorus. We just felt like it needed to build and ramp into this explosion, kind of like you're saying, the lights on moment. And we knew we were going to revisit the vocal lyrics and the line, but it didn't necessarily, like you said, it was an octave up. And then it was like this, it was kind of sort of like the, and now when we play it live, it's like the moment that everybody's looking forward to in the song. You know, it's like moment when people are really like ramping up and you can kind of feel the energy build in the crowd, especially when the first kind of part of that, when that snare drum kind of comes in.
Yeah.
And with the vocal production, we definitely wanted it to just feel like that chaotic kind of energy. You know, it needed to feel like there were, you know, multiple voices and not it wasn't the bad sort of part of the trip. It was the climax of the trip. It was like, this is the most amazing feeling kind of a moment. So. Yeah,
it's what we refer to as the, you know, you're throwing in the kitchen sink, and you absolutely. Really you really did here, but it's a controlled chaos, and this bridge part really was the precursor. You know, it totally changed feels. All these vocals were coming in, and then boom, you just lifted to this last. I'm gonna read the chorus lyrics one more time. I'm not gonna read it. It's a double chorus here. It's the same thing. I lose my voice when I look at you. Can't make a noise though. I'm trying to tell you all the right words. Waiting on the right words. Just another lovesick afternoon, black butterflies and deja vu. Hoping for the right words, waiting for the right words. And I've discussed this on the show. You know, there's a lot of information there. There is essentially four choruses. It's three choruses, but it's a double chorus at the end.
Yeah.
Was there ever talk, or the initial demo you did, was there other lyrics? Or we know what, we should change up this last line here. Or did you feel there was enough information there?
It's just really interesting when you, because I've never really, other than reading lyrics of other people's songs, I've never really thought about our songs and read them aloud like that. And it's really interesting because the care and the what I was trying to put in the song, when I hear it back, I'm like, oh, that could just be dismissed really easily. You know, like that could just be like, oh, that's just some like weak poetry. But in my brain, I was really making sense. And I was really saying a lot, like you're saying, but without saying a ton.
Well, it's a bizarre thing. I've had people on here, guests say that it's so weird hearing my lyrics spoken back. I've never had it happen, you know?
It so is weird.
I always thought, is this coming off as non-authentic, or I'm being weird, or it doesn't lend credence to how great some of the lyrics are on the show? But no, it's not that at all. I'm reading them because, you know, I'm analyzing your lyrics, but I know exactly how you're feeling right now. I can imagine that that's different hearing them back at you.
Well, hearing it too, like I'm saying, it feels like I am, especially just with the words, especially in the verses. What would you say if you know, there's not that many, there aren't that many lyrics, there aren't that many words, but the idea that like people attach themselves to this song specifically, it's one of those things when I go back and write other songs, this is a song specifically where it highlights the idea that I can overthink the shit out of things. Can overthink everything. And a simple chorus like this and a simple set of verses and then just an instrumentation at the end that really kind of just brings it all together. It shows me that it's attainable to be simplistic yet still have depth, but people can still appreciate that, and there's nothing wrong with it, you know. And I've revisited that concept so many times where it's like, dude, you're really stretching here. Like, you're trying too hard, you know?
I think this is perfect. I don't think there needs to be anything else. And your fans can attest to it. They've made this a fan favorite. You know, I'm a sucker for a pop hook, and this thing is, you know, there's more hooks in this thing than a tackle box. This song is, it just keeps building. The last half of the double chorus here, it's the same lyrics that I've read. On the line, I lose my voice and I look at you. That guitar comes back in, mimicking the vocal melody there.
Yeah.
You know, just another thing, another layer, yeah. another hook, which is so great. There is harmonies on the first four lines. And at Waiting on the Right Words, you had said let go a couple times. And it's almost like this distorted kind of vocal effect that's on that line, let go, before the very end. When it's now no harmonies, this is just you saying just another lovesick afternoon, black butterflies and deja vu, hoping for the right words, waiting for the right words. It's just vocals and keys. There's no harmonies. The song ends with that swirling synth sound and kind of fades out. Kind of giving it that ethereal feeling, like, I don't know, maybe you're laying on a chaise lounge in the middle of California on acid.
Yeah. Will everything be okay? Question mark.
I love the way it ends, though, man. It's really cool. Do you recall you got everything layered, recorded for the song, and I don't think I've ever phrased this how I'm going to say right now on the show before. You know, you know what the song is. You wrote it. You know what the demo was. You created it. You recorded it in the studio. But this is an intricate, crazy mix. There's a lot going on. When you finally heard the mix back, was it what you heard in your head? Was it better? Was it, because this is pretty grandiose?
Yeah, I think we've been so fortunate that, again, the relationship that we built with Colby, where he's got no ego. So back and forth with mixes, it's no problem. He takes no offense to, hey, I don't dig the way that this sounds, or I don't dig the way that this feels. He's got none of that. So it's usually we're pretty in sync right off the bat when the first mix comes in. But then there's the tweaks that inevitably happen. But I would say from demo to finished product, the end result completely surpassed what I had in my mind. And I think it really did, I don't know, kind of create that reinforcement that conviction that I had felt with the lyrics and all that, I think was really reinforced with the arrangement and the instrumentation and the mix.
Well, it's a great pop song. It's just the first thing, again, not taking anything away from the writing or the song or the lyrics, but what really struck me was this production. It's just, it's rich, it's full, it's very cool, and I'm stoked that the relationship you have with Colby, it's obviously working out. This is a fan favorite. We're going to wrap up here. Is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with of what you have going on, what the band's doing? Let us know what's happening.
Yeah, we've got a new record called XOXO from Love and Anxiety in Real Time coming out July 9th.
Did Colby produce?
He did not. We self-produced this one, actually.
Okay.
And Colby actually has his fingerprints on a few of the songs. So this was the first time that I actually sat down and wrote a few songs with Colby, which was really an interesting and amazing experience. You know, like having his full brain and not just the producer side of the brain, and having that full spectrum was really, really awesome. Actually, he helped on one of the ones that's already out on Spotify called April 7th. We just released a cover of a Fall Out Boy tune today, and it doesn't sound anything like the original, which
what
is
track?
Kind of our, it's a song called Thanks for the Memories.
Oh yeah.
And we did a kind of a love ballad version of it.
Cool.
So that's out. And like I said, I was doing the Ear Candy on Spotify, and yeah, we're just ripping. we're ready to get back out on tour. So
I hear you, man. Well, hey, thank you for taking the time to sit in. I know the listeners are going to love this episode. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Came and Took It from Fort Collins, Colorado. These guys take the Alkaline Trio, Lawrence Arms, and Jawbreaker and mesh it all together for some really cool punk rock. You can find their music on all the streaming services. Here's a snippet of their song, Resume.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So The Main is one of those bands that I've heard about for years and years, but never dug in. And in preparation for this episode, I dug in. And that band is awesome, man. I can't believe it took me till this episode to listen to them. I kind of feel bad.
Yeah, no. And what a great track, you know, and what a crazy... crazy story behind the song. I just couldn't believe that he divulged that. We got the scoop here on Krista Makes a Podcast. Who knew?
Absolutely. I thought it was really cool that John referenced listening to other episodes of the podcast before divulging what the song was about. So I guess he was inspired hearing people tell their stories on the podcast. That made me feel good. I don't know if that made you feel good, Chris, but that made me feel really good.
No, it really did. And, you know, Chris and I spend a lot of time on the podcast reaching out to publicists and managers and artists to be on the show. And John's publicist actually reached out to us to be on the show. And that's all due to John wanting to be on. And I thought that was awesome. And that did make me feel good. That was cool.
That really made me feel special. So, John, if you're listening right now, thanks, man. We're psyched about
man.
That.
and I meant what I said, and we kind of had a laugh at it. And I was thinking about this. You know, I remember seeing them for the first time, and them having on their coordinated outfits and just less than Jake. Was just never that kind of band. Anytime we did a photo shoot, I've talked about this before, we tried to dress up, we could never pull it off. And these guys just had the look. They went out there And more so than anything, they had that fan base, that rabid, and it was a teenage fan base on those early Warped tours. Just a lot of younger girls screaming for them, good looking guys, and I knew that they were destined for something big. And here they are now, 11 years later, and they're still killing it.
Absolutely, man. They're way more than coordinated outfits, because I didn't see any coordinated outfits when I was listening to their music. I only had my ears to judge, and they're great. I'm glad that, you know, hey, sometimes it's cool to wait and hold off. And then it's like, it's all new to you. You have an entire catalog of music that's all new to you. I'm sure there's bands from the 70s and 80s and 90s I've never checked out that, like, yeah, it's like a whole new thing. It's like a whole new world opens up to you.
Well, and speaking of a whole new world, I love doing this podcast, because I've learned a lot about producers. I didn't know who Colby Wedgeworth was before this, who produced this track. And he's a Nashville guy. And I think this song just sounds amazing. The production is just crisp. It's killer. And I'm looking forward to checking out some of his other productions.
I thought it was really cool. We may have touched on this on an episode or two before, But John talked about being conscious of what you can sing live versus what you can make happen once or twice in the studio, which that's kind of important because you can, I don't know, hit some note or sing something that's like kind of out of your range in the studio that and really screw yourself over for the next several decades of your life if you're not at least considering that in the studio.
And, you know, John's cognizant of that, that they are a live band, that when right. they're making a record, and I've gotten arguments with producers before. I'm like, how are we going to pull this off live? And producers looked at me before, Howard Benson. He said, we're not worried about live. We're making a GD record right now, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I get that. But at the same time, when your bread and butter is live, that's where, you know, your livelihood sits. You want to be able to pull it off, especially in the vocal department, which those can be fixed very easily these days.
Yeah, man, I totally agree. We are in the world of live rock music. We're not pop acts or something that's just purely recorded. We got to be able to deliver live. So that's pretty important that that people don't come to your show and be like, they didn't sound anything like the album. They suck. You know, you could be playing your heart out, but people could think you suck if you overdo it in the studio. And that's what people get used to. Maybe we should start playing bad on our recordings so people come to our live shows and be like, damn, they were amazing. They sounded so much better than the album.
Yeah, no one's ever done it in reverse like that. The record always sounds great. You go see the band live and they're a steaming turd, you know.
Well, you guys sound way better than you do on Pezcore now, right?
That's not much of a compliment, but thank you. Thank you.
I'm just saying that you know, but you know that there's some people out there that you guys probably play those songs 100 times better now. And there's some ska fan from the mid-90s like, oh, they sounded so much better on Pezcore.
I always tell our sound guy, if we're having an off night, just turn it up as loud as the PA can and just put a bunch of reverb and delay on it and just call it a night.
Yeah. You know. Hey, one last thing that I wanted to touch on that John talked about, and I think most people, whether they're tripping or not, can relate to the sentiment of wanting to connect back to the beauty of the world and the beauty of nature and life after we're just constantly inundated by the internet and computers. And sometimes it's nice to just connect back to that, man. And sometimes you don't want to. Sometimes you're like, man, I don't feel like going camping, or man, I don't feel like going canoeing. But then once you're doing it, you're like, damn, this is amazing. And I, you know, could super relate to that because it's easy to just want to sit in front of your computer all the time.
Yeah, I did not know where John was going with that whole story. And when he came out and said it, and, you know, I don't know if anyone's seen a picture of John recently. He's pretty clean cut, good looking guy. And he's telling, you know, I just always associated taking acid with, you know, I don't know, like Jerry Garcia or something, you know. It was the last thing I thought he was going to say. And what a cool story, though. And just how he meant it from the heart. And it wasn't like he was advocating you know, drug use or anything like that. It was what happened and what he was being honest about the song's inception, which I thought was great.
Yeah, for sure, man. And Chris, do you know what else is great?
What else is great, Chris?
The generosity of the listeners of Chris DeMakes, a podcast.
You are absolutely correct. Each and every one of you that gives your hard-earned money towards our fundraiser each month, we're forever indebted to you. It means a lot. And the feedback that we've gotten back from these organizations is just, you don't know how appreciated it is. This month's fundraiser is the National Brain Tumor Society. All your donations will go to research and treatment towards a cure for brain cancer. Just this incurable disease that we're trying to get past it. And anything you can give, $1, $5, $10 will help greatly. Please head over to ChrisDemakesADifference.com. That's where you can donate.
This is absolutely an amazing fundraiser this month. So yeah, if you can head over to ChrisDemakesADifference.com, even if you can donate a buck or two, five, 10, whatever you can give, it all adds up. You know, there's a lot of us in this Chris DeMakes a podcast community. Based on the numbers, Chris, if everybody gave a buck, we'd be able to give a huge amount to these fundraisers each month. And luckily, we have people that give a lot more than a buck. But if everybody could just pitch in a buck, if you can, it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, this month's fundraiser is near and dear to our heart. I don't think I've ever met anybody in my life who hasn't been affected one way or another by cancer. So again, thanks to each and every one of you. And if you haven't already, please head over to Instagram and give me a follow at @lessthanchrisd. I need more followers. I like to entertain. I put up funny pictures and videos and do cool things sometimes. So give me a follow. Tell your friends to follow me. And I'm still doing those custom songs. You can email me at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. I can write a song for you, that special someone, a loved one, anniversaries, birthdays, retirement parties, bar mitzvahs, graduations, you name it, I'll write a song for you. And I got to give a shout out again, Chris, to our Facebook group, Chris Makes a Podcast Facebook group. It's free to join. Head over, tell your friends about that one too. It's a lot of fun. And we started to give shout outs to some of the people that post the most. And I want to say hello to Kevin, I believe it's Sealer or Siler. Chris is saying Siler, I'm saying Sealer. It's probably Siler. You're probably right. Mr. Kevin Siler and Mr. Jonathan London. I know Jonathan London personally. You know Jonathan yeah. London personally.
My good buddy. Geekscape's very own Jonathan London. He's always posting in the group and we love it. And yeah, we appreciate you guys interacting. I'm in there every day. It's my most fun little corner of the internet.
Absolutely. So thanks to Kevin and Jonathan and each and every one of you who are in the group. And, you know, if you think that this podcast sounds amazing and is produced very well, which it is, it has nothing to do with me.
Something to do with you.
I just researched the song and sit here and spill back information with the guests. But the magic behind the scenes goes to my man Chris here, and he's going to tell you about his little side hustle. It's not even so much a side hustle anymore. You guys are doing great. It's called We Know Podcast, and tell everybody about it, Chris.
Yeah, me and my good buddy Matt Kelly, we have tons and tons of podcast experience. If you enjoy this podcast every week and you've been thinking to yourself, man, I would love to have a podcast, but I don't know the first thing about it. You can head to weknowpodcasting.com and Matt and I will take good care of you. Hey, just like I've said this a lot of times, but Chris, when I first approached you about starting a podcast, we had some conversations and you were like, man, everybody has a podcast. Dude, you could say that about anything. You could say that about starting a band. You could say that about, I don't care. You could say that about literally anything. Everyone does that. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people that do podcasts. There's a lot of bad podcasts out there. And what Matt Kelly and I would like to do is help you hit the ground running with your podcast. So check out weknowpodcasting.com. Hit us up. We can help you out.
That's right. Chris and Matt can get your podcast up and running and take any ordinary little podcast and make it extraordinary, which I believe Chris has done with this show right here. So thanks to everybody for listening this week. I want to thank this week's guest, John O'Callaghan from The Maine, for sitting in with us. We'll see you next week.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.